The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hi, I'm Marcy Holland, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, I'm Tanya Kaharski from Washington, New Jersey, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is Kurt Bauer from Syracuse, New York, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
I'm Karen from Arizona, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, this is Amy from South Dakota, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is Eric from Centerville, Virginia, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, this is Brittany and Kendrick Brown from Suffolk, Virginia, and we love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 520 of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show today is Michelle Scribner-McLean and Len Testa. Unfortunately, Chris cannot be with us. We're talking to Len about the ever-rising costs of a Walt Disney World vacation and how it's come from a certain level to what it is today, and we've been talking about admissions, we're going to talk about food, we're going to talk about resorts. But first, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle. Michelle, I think you have some more shout-outs that you wanted to give on the last show. So please, why don't you give them out, and then we'll go right into our discussion with Len.
Okay, Mike, we have some shout-outs. I asked the listeners who wanted a shout-out, and a whole bunch of people said they did. So I'm going to give a few. So first is Lindsay Beauchesne, who has successfully lost 15 pounds, and she wants to do another Disney run. Charlene Lettier, she just said, keep up the great work. I guess she just wanted a shout-out. Deanna Young and her husband Randy Young, they finished the Disneyland 5K, 10K, and half marathon, and I heard it was insanely hot. Siobhan Connor wants a shout-out. Yay, Siobhan. Siobhan Connor and Holly Carter. Caleb Roby, and Caleb is doing the Dopey Legacy Training. So those are our shout-outs for the week, Mike. Thanks for listening, everybody.
So Michelle mentions restaurant. Let's talk about a counter service meal. So counter service and how much it's gone up. Back in 1999, if you bought a burger, fries, and the smallest Coke available at Pecos Bills, your entire family would have paid $24 for that family of four. In inflation adjusted dollars, you would have paid about $39 today for that. All four people to eat. Today it's $52, $51.84. Yeah. So again, in inflation adjusted dollars, it's gone up, what, 30%?
Wow. I know. Sometimes I'm in line with people, like a family, and I'm like, oh my God, that is so much money.
Yeah,
and you just bought like burgers and french fries.
Yeah, you spent $75 on lunch and everyone got a burger.
Service.
And a...
Yeah.
Right.
Them's it's good crazy. Fixins, but not that good, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing, right? It's you know, have the burgers got 33% better? I mean, are the fries that much better? Is the service that much better? Is the ambiance of Pecos Bills 33% better? I mean, if not, where's the money going? What's it for?
And you know, there's another thing I want to point out. As someone who has been linked to Dole Whip, a few years ago, I noticed that what they've tried to do, and I think this is a employed by a lot of food manufacturers, and that is that they held the price of the Dole Whip to a certain amount, but we were getting less. Just like you're getting a smaller boxes of like cereal for the same.
I was getting the exact same. Yeah, what used to be 16 ounces of cereal is now 11.8 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean that's another ploy that is sort of a very subliminal. Subliminal are very under the rug kind of a way of extending the profit margin. You know?
Yeah, and that's if they do it like half an ounce at a time, it's people barely catch on. But it's another way of of increasing the costs or increasing profits. So let's talk about a meal at La Celia, your favorite. So by the way, for this, I'm using when I did this research, I used, are you guys familiar with the Wayback Machine on the Internet Archive?
Of course.
Yeah, and I used Deb Wills' AllEars.net menus going back to 1999. So back in 99, a table service meal at La Cellier for a family of four, Cascope, I know you like La Cellier, that included an appetizer of cheddar cheese soup, a New York strip, a spinach for a side, and then the creme brulee dinner. Guess how much that would have cost your family of four in 1999?
I want to say $1.24.
I think you're actually high. Remember, this is when steak was a nickel a pound. $85.15.
So, as everybody's getting a Scopa special, or
yeah, the New York strip. So that's with
tip, Lynn?
No, not with tip.
So we can.
Well, let me check to see where they did the tip.
Probably.
Yeah, actually, it includes 17% gratuity. Sorry.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's put it this way, Scopa, the New York strip was $20.
Wow.
The cheddar cheese soup was $4. The spinach was $2.
Wow. God.
Yeah. So you could
you can't even get it for $4 at Food and Wine, like the little tiny cup.
No. So that was back in the day. So you could feed your entire family four, if I'm doing my math correctly here, for $85.15. Plus a kids' meal. Kids' meals were $6.50.
It's probably so about $170 for two people now.
The same meal now is $245.70.
Four.
Yeah, because the steak itself is $50. So two steaks right there for the adults is $100.
Wow.
The kids' meals are $26. So basically just the entrees are $152. Not counting the appetizers. Cheddar cheese soup now is $11.
Well, back then
the kids' meals are $26 each?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Gotta remember, Michelle, now several years ago, La Cellier became a, quote, signature restaurant. So,
Thanks, Mike.
No, I'm saying so. So, the reason why I'm saying that is that so Disney categorizes its restaurants. So they're saying, well, it's a signature restaurant. So you're getting the best quality service. You're getting the best quality food.
Yeah, and the kids' meal is granted, it's sirloin. But the thing is, like, back in 2012 is when you had these, you had these huge jumps in the cost of everything. So from 2010, cheddar cheese soup was $5.49. The next year it went to $9, basically doubling. The kids' meals went from $9 to $21. So they completely redid all of these things. The spinach went from $4.50 to $7. I mean, you could see Disney definitely amping it up. And we've talked about this before. The reason is when you're budgeting for Walt Disney World, the average family, you know how much the admission costs. You know how much the hotel costs. You know how much it's going to cost to fly or drive your family down there. You have no idea that a steak is $50. And $50, dude, is – I live in Manhattan half the year. $50 for a New York strip is more expensive than literally the middle of Manhattan.
Wow.
Crazy. I mean, I don't know. These prices are insane. And it's reasonably good food. Right, service is good. Service is solid, but you're talking about $79 for one adult plus tip. That's a lot of money. That's like 3 days of groceries for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oy.
Snacks. So the average snack price in 1999 was under $3. Now it is close to $4. Hmm. So if you wanted to just buy like popcorn or a Mickey bar, back in the day it was $6.80. Today it's almost $16. And again, that's a huge price increase just in the last year. From 2016 to 2017, the price went from $12 to $16. Those are huge increases in snack prices. And again, Disney knows that you'll pay it because they've pretty much raised once you hit $50 for a steak. You pretty much can't go above that, but not many people are going to complain on a $3 snack versus a $4 snack because the numbers are still relatively small.
Lynn, do you have any numbers regarding like a soda
or water?
I don't have. I know it's soda's now $3.50 and it's $3 for water. I do have breakfast costs though.
Okay.
So breakfast. What am I consisting of breakfast here? Breakfast would be a bounty platter.
Right.
So breakfast back in 1999 would have cost your family just under $16.
I was thinking that. It's about 16 to 17, yeah.
In inflation-adjusted dollars, it's about 22. Today, it's 34.
Oh,
and again,
God.
a huge jump just in the last year. Last year, it would have cost your family $27.40. So basically, you know, the kids' version of that. Now it's $33.90. And again, it's Disney knows. But here's the thing that this fascinates me. So I've done a couple of talks at the University of Central Florida to their data science team. And they say that, Disney has a huge data science organization and literally like 60 PhDs in statistics. And all they do all day is figure out how to adjust these numbers at the margins to maximize revenue. The name of the group is actually Revenue Optimization. And what they do is they run models and they run experiments on consumers all day, every day. They have all kinds of computing power. And they're basically looking at things like, you know, what if we raise the price 75%, 75 cents? What if we raise the price of this meal a dollar? You know, what if we cut back by 30 minutes, you know, on the operating time of this ride? And they run these experiments over and over and over again every day. Just to do stuff like this.
And do they take into account the cost of living, the average, you know, income of folks? And okay.
Funny. Yeah. So I've done some numbers. I don't know if we talked about this before, but if you go through if you're a travel agent and you go through the College of Disney Knowledge or the Disney College of Knowledge, mm-hmm. they actually have some marketing material that breaks down what their typical guests look like, and it's really interesting to compare what Disney thinks its average guest is versus what the American population looks like as a whole. Mm. So Disney's got these seven different categories of people. And what I'll do is I'll describe for you how Disney describes them.
Wow.
And then we'll talk about where the typical Disney consumer fits in with the average American. So the first one that they have, the ones that spend the least at Disney, are called the Deep Dreamers. These are people that get 10 vacation days a year. They are, according to Disney, they have moderate incomes. Their household income is between $50,000 and $80,000 a year. So for reference, the median household income in the United States is $56,000. So these are people right at the 50th percentile all the way up to the top 13%. So basically, if you're anywhere from the 50 to the 87th percentile, Disney considers you a dreamer. You spend
dreaming because you're dreaming you won't go into debt after your vacation.
Yeah, exactly, you can afford this thing. So so the lowest income group here, and this is like the starter Disney vacation. They're spending $1,860 a year, according to Disney, on their vacations. So excluding transportation, which is typically 44% of the cost of your trip, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they're spending $1,041 on their Disney trip. $1,041 gets you what, Mr. Scopa?
For the trip? Well, yeah. Again, we're talking about variables. First off, you're talking, when you say $1,400 or whatever you just said,
$1,000.
$1,041. That's per person, or is that for a family?
That's total. That's your entire family. That's. So let's put it this way. $1,041 is more than 60% of Americans spend all year on their vacation. These people have. Wow. Yeah.
So it gets you. It might get you one. I guess you could. No, you couldn't do that. I was going to say I hear a buzz.
Oops. That was me. Sorry, it was my phone.
I would say, Len, if I had 1,000, I had a family of four. Number one, oh, man, it's I have to make some tough decisions, whether we're going to go for one day or 2 days, and there'll be, if I go for 2 days, that's about 800.
I'll give you a hint. You can't go for 2 days for $1,000.
No. I mean, even if you were going to go for a one-day park hopper, that's 170, I think, for a one-day park hopper. So you're talking 700 of the 1,000 right there. So you go for one day, you may stay at a value, and you're going to eat counter service restaurant food, and that's it, kids.
Yeah, so that's basically what it is. You actually have a few more options. You can, for $1,000, you can stay two nights at an offsite hotel, go for one day for tickets.
Offsite.
And eat a table service meal and park. Remember, we talked about parking earlier. That's only about $855. But if you wanted to spend the entire $1,040, you could stay at a deluxe hotel, so Animal Kingdom Lodge, eat nothing but counter service food, and go to the parks for one day. That would be your entire budget.
Oh my gosh.
It's $1,026.63. So
as long as you don't stay on a Friday or a Saturday night, though, probably.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, God forbid you go on a Friday.
Yeah.
Right? That midweek Wednesday thing. Yeah, but that's what you get with a family of four. Wow. And then keep in mind, these are people who make up to the 87th percentile in terms of household incomes in the United States. We're talking about basically 9 out of 10 households in the United States. That's their vacation for the year.
Wow.
So the next one is called the Simply Fun Families. And Fun Families here is one word. I cannot wait for Disney to start using that in their marketing. They spend $3,100 a year on their vacations. After transportation, it's $1,736. Their household income is less than $80,000. So it's basically somewhere between the 80th and the 87th percentile. So these are people who are well off, according to most Americans. They only get 9 vacation days a year, and Disney says that this demographic is the most likely to have only one parent in the household. So parent in the household, 9 vacation days a year, you're spending $1,736. What do you get for $1,736?
Michelle?
You get...
Family four.
It's a family of four. I was trying to look on the thing that you sent us here. $1,736. Well, you would get like 3 days at a park and one day of food.
Sweetie. You would not get 3 days at a park. You get 2 days at a park.
2 days at a park and one day of food.
Yeah.
And everybody goes back a lot lighter.
And they're camping at Fort Wilderness.
Right.
I didn't,
water
no, I didn't,
and popcorn
I didn't,
for
I
you
didn't
guys.
Consider that. You know, essentially, you could get. Here's, I'll give you some options. For $1,500, I feel like the old Wheel of Fortune here. For somewhere around $1,500, you could get 2 days in a park. You can get three hotel nights in an offsite hotel, and you could get table service meals your entire time. That's $1,500. You could also do the same thing
at
a value.
Three meals a day.
Yeah, three meals. Yeah. That's.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can also get do the same thing at a value. You could stay at pretty much any a value. At a moderate hotel, you would get one night at the hotel, maybe two, depending on whether you want to. You could do two nights and a counter service meal, or you could do a deluxe hotel for two nights and everyone eat counter service. You would just need to extend your budget out a little bit more, maybe $50. Yeah, but basically it's for $1,736, which is the second least expensive of Disney's families, you could get two nights in a theme park and two nights in a hotel.
Wow.
And again, this is more than 80% of American households.
Wow.
The next one up is called the Magic Makers. These are people whose half of them, according to Disney, have incomes above $80,000 a year. That puts them in the top 13% of U.S. households. They get 17 vacation days a year, and they spend on average $4,190 on their vacation. So again, according to the census, that's actually in the top 20% of American households. So this is where Disney and the Bureau of Labor Statistics sort of match. That's $2,346 after taxes, and that's actually not bad. With two adults and two kids, you can stay at a deluxe resort for a couple of nights. You can get three nights in the theme parks. You can eat counter service meals, maybe splurging for a table service meal. But that gets you basically 3 days.
Yeah.
So the question then is, what do you do for the other 14 vacation days you have when you blow all this money in 3 days in Walt Disney World?
Mm.
Everyone's staying home and working on the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
So let's talk about the upper ones. And this is really where Disney's targeting. So the next four groups are all at least in the top 13% of American households. And basically, it's the top five. I will give you the names, and then we'll talk a little bit about them. The next one is called the Insatiable Kidults, like kid-adult combined.
That's us.
The Team Players, the Experience Curators. This is like the worst fantasy football league team names I've ever heard.
Oh, my God.
And Variety Hunters. They range in household income from 80K to above 125K. The 125K, you're in the top 5% of American households. And the amount of money they spend per year on their vacation goes from, again, right at the $2,000, $2,100 range, all the way up to almost $8,000. Hmm. And again, that puts them, the top 20% of American households only spend half that. So we're talking about people who are earning a lot of money. They've all got double-digit vacation days, anywhere from 13 on up. But basically, more than half of the groups that Disney identifies in its key demographics are making more money than 80% of American households.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
But you can
so one of the things that shocks me about this is how few vacation days people have.
Too. Right? Nine?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Even 15? Even 15? That doesn't seem like very much to me. I don't know. And that's the top group.
I hear a buzz.
Yeah.
Sorry. Hold on a second. Let's Hannah call me back again. Sorry. There you go. Okay. Yeah. So that's the, 9 or 10 days. I guess if you're in a service industry and you get 2 weeks a year, that's fairly common. If you've just started a job, I know the average tenure for an American in a job is somewhere around 5 years.
Maybe retail.
The median. Yeah. So, if you've just started a job, you're probably getting 2 weeks a year. Maybe, with personal days, you're getting, 15 days off a year plus holidays or whatnot, but you're not getting a lot. I know when I left my last corporate gig, I was nominally getting, 4 weeks a year, but what my boss said is, I'm not going to track your time because you're an adult.
Right.
Yeah. So whatever I needed, I took.
But when you look at the team players, and let's just say roughly, it's about, it's more than this, but it's $6,000 a year.
$6,970.
Yeah. So it's about, what is that, 5% of the annual income?
Right? Yeah. So they say about a third of this group earns between 80K and 125K a year, and then another third earns more than 125K a year. Mm-hmm. So for let's say 3820 divided by 125,000. Yeah, that's 3%. Yeah, maybe it's 3 to 6%, 3 to 7%. Wow. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
Wow.
But for 125K, I mean, depending on how you're living, right? At some point, you can't buy a bigger house, you can't buy a more expensive car, can't buy a more expensive wristwatch or whatever, or a phone, and that money becomes discretionary, especially above 125K, right? I mean, again, I spend my time in Manhattan, where 125K is probably not a lot of money.
No.
But for most Americans, yeah.
One of the things that I don't see on this, Len, is there's kind of, it's kind of inferred, but are these people coming back to Disney again and again? I know there, some of them describe people as a high affinity for Disney, but are they spending 5 or 6% of their annual income every year on a Disney vacation?
Yeah, look at the magic makers, right? So those are the people who more likely to be Florida or California residents, so they're mm-hmm. more likely to keep coming back. They're spending $4,200 a year on vacations. And again, they're in the top 87%, so the 50th to 87th percentile in terms of income. But, dude, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, it's one thing to talk about what it costs, but I think the thing that we don't do a good job of putting in perspective, especially Disney fans, is saying what's wrong with this. Like, what's wrong with Disney doing this, right? What's wrong with income inequality? And I think one of the things is there's a social aspect to it, and then there's a financial aspect to it if you care at all about the company. From a social aspect, I think it's a problem when the social experiences of the top 20% of household incomes are vastly different than the bottom 80%. Right? Like, we as Americans don't have the same sort of shared cultural experiences, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if we all can't agree that Mickey Mouse is fun and why Mickey Mouse is fun, or, you know, we all can't make Space Mountain jokes, we might be less as a people because of that. I'm not saying, you know, that literally, but, you know, we should all be able to experience a Disney theme park, I think.
And you thought we were just going to talk about the cost of a Walt Disney World vacation and how it's risen over the years. But, of course, we get into a much deeper conversation when Len's around. And we're going to continue this deep conversation in the next episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast as we talk about going to Walt Disney World as a rite of passage. So, for Chris Haleopoulos, for Len Testa, for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.